Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today, we meet an educational reformer who states unequivocally that reform lies squarely with teachers. In fact, he refers to the art of teaching as a higher calling that requires total commitment and love. Love for the children and the art. Dr. Steve Perry is plain-spoken and controversial at times and takes no prisoners when it comes to educating children. But his results as founder and principal of the Capital Preparatory Magnet School in Hartford, Connecticut, speak for themselves. In a school that's been open just under a decade, every school graduate, that's 100% of all graduates, have gone on to higher education. The school is in the middle of Hartford, Connecticut, in the inner city. It is made up mostly of minority students, African Americans and Latinos, and most are the first generation to go to college. Steve Perry is the author of Push It Has Come to Shove, Getting Our Kids the Education They Deserve, Even If It Means Picking a Fight. It's published by Random House. He's also a special educational correspondent and contributor to CNN. He'll be speaking tonight at the Robert Roosa Moten Gala for the Morton Comprehensive Health Services here in Tulsa, and he joins us by phone today on Studio Tulsa. Dr. Steve Perry, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Rich.
I've had the honor to talk to a number of people like you, people who have created these little outposts of educational excellence. Your school, the Capital Preparatory Magnet School, you're sending 100% of your graduating class to higher education, and most of those kids are first-generation college goers. So congratulations to you on all that hard work. I guess my question is, we have all these little pockets of excellence around the country, and a lot of times they involve a charismatic leader such as yourself. Why is it so difficult to expand that pocket of excellence to a community as a whole, or even multiple schools oftentimes within this little pocket of excellence?
Because the adults who maintain the status quo of failed public schools are afraid of the expansion. They're afraid of the power that they're giving up. And bottom line, they don't love children like the rest of us.
That's a pretty strong statement, but I know the institutional inertia. Is it inertia, or is it this fear of this is the way we've always done it, so even though the results are coming back poor, we're going to keep doing what we've always done?
In order for the status quo to be maintained, it has to benefit someone. And it benefits the employees of the public schools. The reason why America's schools are failing America's children is because they're not designed to educate America's children. They're designed to employ America's adults.
So it's a union
issue? They do exactly what they're there to do.
Yeah.
A New York Times article came out in 2010. It said that 12% of African-American boys, 12% of African-American boys, are reading at a proficient level. Now, you know or may not know, but proficient does not mean at grade level.
Right.
Meaning by the fourth grade, only 12% of African-American boys are reading at proficient. Proficient means just below the grade level. We'd say, wow, that's horrible. Things must be horrible for black boys. Good thing we're white boys. Okay, good thing. 38% of white males in the fourth grade, according to the NAEP examination and an article reported on in the New York Times, are reading at a proficient level. It's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. However, 100% of the employees are still employees, and the overwhelming majority of those individuals who work in public schools get to keep their jobs from year to year. How is that possible when so little education is going on?
That's a good question. What's your answer?
Well, the answer is that we don't value our children over our adults. We just don't. And there are some populations and some zip codes that we've essentially thrown away. Think about it, 12%. There's nothing that if you had only a 12% chance of doing, would you think you have a pretty good chance of being successful at?
That's right.
It's as bad as it gets. You have a better chance of making shots from half court than learning to read? Really? Come on. In America? Seriously? And people can come up with all the silly arguments about, well, you don't understand, it's poverty and the poverty. Okay, well, middle-class African-American boys are reading at about the same rate as poor white boys. So now what do we have to say about poverty? The only reason why some populations are failing is because We have a failed school model. It's profoundly, completely failed to meet America's academic needs. We wouldn't be in the bottom quartile of the world, though we're spending in the top quartile in the world, if it worked. It's broken. And one of the biggest reasons why we keep failing is because we keep listening to people who have never run successful schools at any level. I mean, it's ridiculous. Why on earth are we going to people who've never, ever run a successful school system, school classroom, anything? Listen, Arne Duncan is a great dude. Can someone please point to the successful school system he's ever run? Please. Oh, just one.
Chicago public schools are not
amazing success story, right? Yeah. One of the highest murder rates on the planet. One of the highest dropout rates. Completely dysfunctional school system where the teachers strike in the middle of the school year. We keep hiring superintendent after superintendent to come without any evidence of their success. No one ever says, hey, have you ever done this well? I mean, let's start there. Are you good at this job? I could be. No, but for real, have you ever been good at it? Like, can you show me where you've actually done this before? Well, we have these pockets of success throughout the country, and anytime someone from one of the pockets says what needs to be done, there's a teachers union or association, or there's some people who want to maintain the status quo. No, that's not the way you do it. Really.
I was hearing a speech that you gave at one point. You said your school is a public school. It's a magnet school, but it's a public school. You said you never had a visit from the superintendent or any of the other principals in Hartford.
Nah.
Is that still
not
the case?
Let me see. Let me count. We've had in 7, 8 years, we've had 5 superintendents. I think a couple weeks ago, the most recent superintendent was in the building. There was this award that the superintendent gave to certain kids, so she came to have lunch with that child. So I think if that constitutes a visit, then the answer is now yes.
But they've never really studied what you're doing. And maybe we should take a step back and tell us what you're doing. Now, you've been a teacher. Have you observed firsthand some of the failing school strategies as an early teacher when you began teaching?
Well, I taught at the community college level, and I was a social worker within the schools. Yes, I've seen why. It starts with the fact, and this is a fact, not everyone can teach. In fact, very few people are actually good at teaching. And we just presume that because you have a certification that you can actually teach.
It's incredibly hard work, and it involves a really good teacher gives a lot of themselves to each student in the classroom, and that's a hard thing to do, especially if they have a family at home, family.
It is and it isn't. And, okay. You know, if you love something, all love is hard, right? Period. It's hard, but not to the point of impossible if you have the skills. I meet with teachers on a fairly regular basis. I sit down with my colleagues and I go through their classes and I ask them, did you teach, did the kids learn what you wanted them to learn, and it's always yes. And, well, can you show me how? Well, not really. But I do know I told them. Well, telling someone is not teaching someone. I could tell you how to build a car, but it doesn't mean I taught you how to do it. Where these schools go wrong is that they think that it's the kid's fault for not learning, as opposed to the teacher's fault for not teaching. I did a professional development with a school in Michigan last week, and it took the better part of the afternoon to get this school, who brought me in, by the way. So you bring me in, you must be ready to hear what I'm about to say. If you're not, too bad for you. I'm here. It took the better part of the afternoon when I would say to them, when the children didn't learn, what does that mean? We didn't teach it. No, for real. Say that with me. You have to say that. Because if you're not personally invested in this, if you don't think it's your responsibility to teach them, then it's real easy to sit back and say, well, they're poor and their parents don't come to school and parents don't care and they don't this and they don't that. So hold on. The only kids that you can educate are kids who come already knowing how to do it with parents who are going to sit in class and make sure they do it. Really? Wow, you suck as a teacher.
Bet you that goes over great.
Hey, I think that one of the most important things I do in my job is career counseling. To sit down respectfully with one of my colleagues and say, I just don't think teaching's for you. I could be wrong, and you could go to another building and teach lights out, but in our building, you're not. The kids are not learning. Even an untrained educator can walk through a building and see which kids are learning and which kids are not, simply by the posture of the children. You walk into a building and kids are leaning forward, like something amazing is about to happen, they're probably learning. Hmm. If they're laid back, heads all looking into the sky, talking to each other, the posture of play is different than the posture of learning. It's an earnest posture.
What you were talking about of failure to learn as teacher's fault, I've happened to run into that a couple of times, even in our own school district here. I've also seen the other side of it. It is a really interesting dynamic when a teacher comes in and says, I've got to figure out a new way to reach your student to get him to learn these concepts. That's very empowering, but do you think our school districts encourage that approach?
Well, when you send your child to a school, that's what you expect the teachers to do, isn't it? I mean, that's core. When your son doesn't pick up algebra right away, do you expect the teacher to look over at your 14-year-old and say, look, homie, that's your fault. I said it. If you didn't pick it up, that's on you.
Yeah.
Go home and ask your parents who don't know how to do algebra.
You know,
I
would say that the school systems has become so ingrained that perhaps there are some parents who would think that.
Who would think what?
That if their kid's not getting it the way the teacher teaches it, that it must be the child's fault. Because
most people will.
Yeah.
No. Most of us as parents have been bamboozled into believing that it's our fault that we don't know what this teacher was trying to teach our son or daughter when we weren't in the room, that we don't understand it. Listen, my kids go to my school. There are times in which they come home with homework from people who I've employ, who teaching a curriculum that I've developed, you know, that we as a team that we developed. And I don't know what the kid's doing. I have to sit and look at it and say, oh, okay. And then take some time sometimes to catch up. Sometimes I get it. Sometimes I don't.
Well, give us a sense of your approach at Capital Preparatory as far as how you develop your curriculum. You know, one of the things I've heard from a number of educational leaders, they say a dynamic principal, a dynamic administrator is probably one of the keys to a school success. You don't believe that?
No, it's not. You know, that I have a personality that's a particular type doesn't mean that I'm the only type that can run a school.
Doesn't need to be charismatic, but they need to be competent, and they have to be...
Competent is different. Competent is very different. One of the reasons why most schools fail is because they don't have a leader who's leading. They have an administrator. And there's a difference. Leaders have always been leaders. You could check with a third-grade teacher, and third-grade teachers, yeah, they were in charge of picking up the utensils at the end of the lunch or whatever it was. And you can go all the way to high school, and they were the cheerleading captain, or they were on the debate team. But they were always in a position of leadership. Too many of our schools have people who are running the schools who just didn't want to be teachers anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, they didn't want to teach anymore. It wasn't for them. And, you know, I figured, well, I've been doing this for 5 years, and I'm vested, and this is a good living because, I mean, let's be honest, as many people will lie to us and tell us that teachers are poor. I've yet to meet poor teachers. They're always doing better than the kids that they educate, I tell you that much. So they figure, you know what, I can make, you know, what appears to be more money. And as a result, they take on this responsibility. But they're really bad. I meet so many ineffective principals, nice people. But if you can't fire people, you can't do this job. If you're concerned about a parent coming in here half-cocked, you know, swinging a finger and rolling a neck, every time you make a decision, you're not going to make a decision. If you're concerned about the superintendent, whoever she or he is this week, coming in and telling you that you're bad at your job, if you're concerned about any of those things, you just can't do this job.
My guest today is Dr. Steve Perry. He's the founder and principal of the Capital Preparatory Magnet School in Hartford, Connecticut. The school's only been open, a little over a decade?
Almost a decade.
And they've had 100% graduation going to higher education. Most of those kids graduating are first generation to go to college. And I guess it's pretty racially and ethnically balanced, I would think.
Well, it depends on who you ask. The state... Yeah. According to our state, we need to have 25% of our kids be white. So if this were a conversation with the state, then my answer would be absolutely. We are so balanced, it's not even funny. But if you come and look in the building, you find the overwhelming majority of our children are black and Latino.
Yeah. He's also the author of Push's Come to Shove, Getting Our Kids the Education They Deserve, Even If It Means Picking a Fight. He'll be the keynote speaker at the Robert Roosa Moten Gala for the Morton Health Services tonight here in Tulsa. And he joins us by phone here on Studio Tulsa. Well, getting back to that idea of educational leader, of a leader running the school, you mentioned teacher pay, and you said you never ran into a poor teacher, but let's face it, a person who's being an effective educational leader, and even an effective teacher, if you compare their job skills to what they're doing in the classroom and compare it to other professions, they are woefully underpaid.
Which profession?
Well, let's go into business management. A manager that is managing, 25 students who are supervising 400 or 500 kids? That guy's going to be making at least six figures in most...
At 21?
Well, there's not too many principals at 21 either.
That's the point. What you find... So the reason I ask you that question is because there's a difference between lore and fact. The fact is that when we have conversations about teacher pay, teacher in particular pay, what we look at is the starting salary of this public servant. And we don't consider a number of things. One, this person is 21 years old. This is a kid who was probably living off a Pell Grant 6 months before they got this job. Now they have a job with the best benefits that anyone in the community has. If you're not a public employee, you do not have better benefits than we do. Period.
Right.
So if some of the public employees were to say, you know what, you don't have to pay 90% on virtually everything or 100% on the things that you don't pay 90% on, including in some communities up to plastic surgery. In Hartford, you could have had gender reassignment until a couple of years ago, and the school system would have paid for it. So if we say, you know what we're going to do? We want more cash in our pockets, and we're going to give back to the community some of the money that we're taking on the benefit side, then our salaries would be higher too. Because on that business person, woman or man, my wife works in insurance. She's worked for 3 or 4 insurance companies here in Hartford because this is the big business in town. We have yet to use her benefits over mine. There's no way. Why would we? My benefits are so much better. $25 copay on the best thing, I can go and get every test known to man.
So you don't buy the idea that teachers are underpaid as a profession?
Any great teacher is underpaid, but what does underpayment mean? How much do we pay the president? There are college basketball coaches that make more than the president of the United States. So yeah, we can make certain arguments that some people are underpaid and some people are overpaid, but the facts are we didn't come into this thing to be paid a lot of money. We understood that. We are not drafted into this. Our educators, for the most part, work 8 months a year, get every single break off known to woman or man.
True.
And people can say, well, they work so many more hours. Really? So your second grade teacher, after 5 years, is coming home and doing that much homework? No, she's not. That's not true. It's just not true. They can say what they want, but see, I work in the profession. Try that with someone who doesn't. And if you're working so hard, then why are our kids doing so poorly? If everyone's working so hard, then why are we so bad at it?
I would say at your school, they're probably not bad at it.
No, they're not. And it's because we know when I hire a teacher, I'm looking for someone who loves kids. And I do mean love. And I mean that. If you love when I do an interview for a teacher, not just a teacher, in the room next door, we're interviewing for head custodians, I ask them the same questions. Everyone in this building has to love kids. If you don't love kids, you can't be here. As soon as you and I get off this phone, I'm going to go into one of the worst neighborhoods in this state, and I'm going to try to convince a mother to allow her son's, he used to be his youth football coach, take him into his home. Not for football reasons, but because he's doing so poorly in her home, and the community he's in is so dangerous that if we don't save this kid, like right now, we're not going to be able to help him. I'm not getting paid to do that. There's nothing in my job description that says go risk your life to go and try and extricate a child from home. That's what I do because that's what I love my children. And I know if we don't do this, this boy is a wrap. He's already been arrested 3 times.
So it's a sense of mission. You have to have that sense of mission. It doesn't matter how much
it is a calling. If you're not called to do this, don't do it. If this job is that hard, if Friday is the best day of the week, don't come back Monday. For real, if you go home and you complain about your kids, you sit in a teacher's lounge and you whine and moan about how the kids don't do this, don't come back. Do something else. The older I get, the more I recognize, Rich, life is short, man. So if this is the one life you have to live unless you believe something different, make the most of it. If this doesn't make you want to jump and shout, if you don't love your kids to the point of getting emotional about them when you think about, when you talk about them, if you don't think about them when you're shopping for food and think about how I have to bring these things into my classroom, if that's not who you are, this is not for you. Do something different. It is not your right. You don't get to come in and play in kids' lives. That's not, you don't get to do that. They don't get another fifth grade teacher. They don't get another chance to take Spanish 1 for the first time. If you're not coming to give these kids 190%, stay you behind home.
How does that message go over? I assume once you hire them, I would think there are teachers that live up to that ideal and then others that don't. I mean, you said you're a career counselor up front. Do you is your turnover rate among teachers pretty high at the school?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Can you give us a sense of how high, like a half the teachers?
I'd say about
30%, 20%?
About 15-20% a year, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Which is good for everybody, by the way. Also understand, I'm not coming in and rah-rah in somebody's face, you're a horrible person. That's not what I'm here to do. That's not fair. Simply because they're bad at this job doesn't mean they're a bad person. And that's what the people who argue for teachers being employed for life, like judges, they're the ones who come in and say, but they're good people, they're good fathers, they're taxpayers, they're good mothers. They could be a great dad. I had a wonderful guy who taught Spanish. He was amazing, just the sweetest single dad. So I saw him with his daughters, and he was just so affectionate towards them. He was the worst Spanish teacher I ever met. Just bad. And I said that to him. I said, you know, you're a great guy. If I had a sister, you could date her. But you're in a new job because you can't work here. And it's not fair to either one of us for me to keep coming in and asking you to do things that you're just not capable of doing.
So how do we get more people who are committed to this mission that you're talking about to consider education? Because
there's a lot of ways. And I will tell you, one of the reasons why so many of our kids in public schools don't have access to the most talented teachers. And a teacher is not something that you can get a degree in, it's just something you are, is because of the certification requirements. Think of it this way. Regardless of your political spin, President Obama couldn't teach history in a D.C. public school.
That's true. That's probably true. Yeah.
No, he can't. Yeah. He's not certified. He couldn't. He can't.
Well, many states they have.
No one on his cabinet, none of the legislators could teach government. Yet they could work at any college on earth, for any corporation, become billionaires doing it. But because of the certification requirements in public education, you can't. But they could go to Our Lady of this or that, or they could go to Country Day of this or that. So those kids get access to people who want to come in and teach. One of the things that the private prep schools do really well is they create a job description where you, if in order to do this job, you better love kids. Otherwise, your days are going to suck. You got to eat breakfast with these kids. You got to have lunch with them. You got to have dinner with them. You got to be their advisor. You have to coach them two seasons a year. Then you have to meet with their parents on a fairly regular basis. You got to do individual projects with these kids. If you don't like them, life is going to so suck for you. You're not ever going to have fun. And in many cases, it's expected that you're going to send your own kids there.
So you have a vested interest in making sure
that
the education
so you're
is
in.
Great. Yeah.
And in many cases, on top of that, you either went to that school yourself or to an independent school. So you're deeply invested in this thing. Like, this is not a game for you. So they do a very good job at those schools of saying, A, we're going to take kids from the brightest. You know, these are the people who were really good students back at wherever they went to school. They take them from some of the most elite colleges on earth, many of whom don't have education programs. So if you went to Yale, you couldn't major in education because it's not an option.
That's true. And and also, just getting back to that analogy of preparing teachers, an awful lot of teachers that start out, you know, it's like being dumped in the deep end of the pool. Do you think that's just the experience of teaching in America?
Well, I think one of the biggest problems is that the professors who are teaching are not really good teachers themselves. Strange, really. I can think of a teacher we have right now. She works really hard. She's not a great teacher, but she works really hard. And we're going to keep her another year because she does what we tell her to do. It's akin to watching Dancing with the Stars. There are some people who get in there and they can dance. And all you have to do is teach them the steps. The other people who, no matter what their size is or no matter what their profession is, you watch them, it looks like you can see their lips moving as they count their steps. And this woman is of that type where she, I can see her counting her steps. However, she does everything we tell her to do. So now it's really on us whether or not we tell her to do the right things. But the fact is that she has a master's degree in education. So I mean, she's got 6 years of college professors who've essentially taught her something. She's bright. I know that. She had a high GPA. But teaching wasn't one of the things that they taught her. I'll give you, for instance, one of the reasons why many teachers are ineffective is because they don't understand the basics of teaching. If you can think of your eyes and ears and mouth as needing to be engaged in order to learn something, and whatever you learn needs to be broken down into a size that either your eyes, ears, and mouth can take in, if the senses can't take it in, if it's too large a concept, if it's not concrete, sequential, then you can't learn it without extreme toil. So when a teacher wants you to learn something, if a basketball coach wants you to learn something, they don't have you shooting threes from day one, right? They don't have you doing behind-the-back no-look passes. First thing they do is they teach you how to dribble, standing in place, dribble. They may even just teach you how to hold a ball.
Right, how to pass the ball.
How to pass the ball, how to catch the ball. And they do that for years, right? For years. Some kids break out and you see the second grader and he's doing these things. The ball's bigger than him, but he can't even barely reach his basket, but he's doing these things. But for the most part, you see people move at a certain rate. That's what learning is. That's how you learn. And most teachers don't do that. What they do is, we had this teacher, he's no longer with us. He was teaching midpoints in geometry, and I thought, wow, cool, I'm going to sit through this because I actually know how to do that, so I'm going to feel real good. and he was doing it as what we call a do now or initiation, or basically the first thing you do when you sit down. So after about 45 minutes of the first thing you sit down, both the kids and I are looking at each other like, I'm not really sure what we're doing now. And I thought I knew how to do midpoints, but by 45 minutes into this, he'd convinced me that I wasn't that good at midpoints. And it wasn't because I didn't know how to do it, because he did something that reminded me, actually, I do know how to do this. And he didn't do it on purpose. He did it, I think, inadvertently. He was running out of options here. But he thought he was the smartest person in the room because he knew how to do midpoints. Yeah, you might know how to do them, but you're not teaching the people how to do it. That's your job. Your job is to show these people in this room who don't know how to do it how to do it. That's the core purpose of why you're here. They came here this morning to learn how to do something. If they leave this afternoon not knowing how to do it, then that's your fault.
And that's your approach. Results over everything, right?
That's all that matters. When you wake your children up and you go through all the turmoil of getting their behinds out of the building and into a bus that gets them to another building, you expect them to come back one day smarter.
We'll look forward to hearing more at the Robert Russo Morton Gala. Dr. Perry, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Rich.
Dr. Steve Perry is the founder and principal of the Capital Preparatory Magnet School in Hartford, Connecticut, and the author of Push Has Come to Shove, Getting Our Kids the Education They Deserve, Even If It Means Picking a Fight. He'll be the featured speaker at the Robert Russo Morton Gala for the Morton Comprehensive Health Services. That takes place tonight. If you would like information on attending, visit mortonhealth.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.